Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in today. So glad you joined us. I'm Bill Arnold, in for Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise. We're here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Welcome to Live the Promise. A very happy Thursday to you. You know, we're thinking about Susie as she's getting lots of rest and hopefully plenty of delicious ice cream on vacation. So if you have a minute, tell her you love her and you miss her. Well, you don't miss her too much. You can do that at Susie@myfaithradio.com. Drop her a note, SUSIE@myfaithradio.com. She would love to hear from you because she's relaxing. And, you know, why not now send a bunch of love? Nothing like a bunch of love when you're on vacation. Anyway, God tells us to love our neighbor. We all know that's not going to happen, huh? Well, that's a tough one. We should be in right relationships with everybody, but not all of our relationships are right all the time. We get in certain conflicts with our kids or our spouse or our coworker. So the million-dollar question is, how do we get back in right relationships? I mean, we want the problem to be somebody else's fault. What does that have to do with me? Because it's not my fault. So all of a sudden, we got trouble. So my guest today in studio, Dr. Glenn Pickering, he's author of several books. The one that I'm looking in front of me is called Tag, You're It. It's the world's most common game. It's the secret game that's destroying your marriage. It's a powerful book that I've read many, many times, and it's an incredible resource for understanding this game that gets played. Even though I don't like to say games are played, it's something that happens inside relationships where we do very destructive things. So, but today we're going to talk about being responsible and being in a relationship where 50% of the responsibility is yours. And Dr. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's talk about this 50-50 rule, because right off the bat, I know we're gonna cause some trouble. This is going to be trouble.
That's our goal, right?
Yep.
Cause trouble. It actually does cause havoc sometimes. I do counseling for my day job, as you know. And one of the things I see when people come in to me for help is they're in conflict of some sort with their child, with their friend, with their neighbor, with their coworker, with their spouse, somebody. And they're very, very aware of what the other person is doing wrong. And they say that to me in sort of a challenging way, like daring me to disagree. And I always think, no, I'm sure you're right. I'm sure they are doing those things wrong. But the real important question is, but what's your part of that interaction? What's your half of what's going wrong? And then they tend to look at me like, you know, I said something really bad. But because I get that's kind of a challenging question. It's so much easier to see what the other person's doing wrong.
Well, that's why I'm here, because the problem is somebody else's fault.
I know.
You're already not listening to me.
I know. It's so funny. This is how I lose clients. oh, that's actually true. Okay. So, but here's the interesting thing. We all know on some very obvious intuitive level that it takes two people to get into some kind of conflict. You know, we always say things like it takes two to tango and et cetera. I mean, mm-hmm. We just really get it. If there are two people who are having a bad conversation, there are two people who are having a bad conversation. We get that. And then some conflict happens in our relationship or something's not right. And instead of sticking with what we know absolutely has to be true, that it must have something to do with each of us, we slide to that sort of childish either-or thinking place where we think either it has to be all your fault or all my fault. And I don't want it to be all my fault.
Never.
So I work real hard to prove that it's all your fault.
Okay. So that's the default response that most people have.
Right, we go there so fast. It's almost shocking when I see just how fast that knee-jerk reaction actually happens.
So when there's a problem or a conflict, the referee jersey never goes on and we go, oh, I guess I'm partly to blame on this. We always look for, you know, who we can assess fault to, and it's never us, is it?
Right, and we want it to be anybody except me, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I wrote the book, a tag is, you know, that's part of what I talk about, is that we tend to solve problems. Instead of solving them, we just want to look for whose fault it is, and we never actually get to the solution. And so I think it's like two little kids thinking, oh, you pushed me. Yeah, but I only did that because you took my toy. Well, I only did that because you, I mean, we just go back and forth assigning blame to each other instead of thinking, okay, we get into these patterns. What half of that pattern is on me? What do I do that contributes to that pattern? And what do I need to do to change that pattern? Which, of course, is a way more helpful question.
But a very dangerous one, because you're becoming vulnerable in a situation where you don't feel like it's your fault at all.
Right.
So yeah, for them to say what part of my behavior contributes to our problem, boy, that's a very evolved thing to say.
It takes a certain maturity, and Jesus understood this perfectly well. So when he says in Matthew 7, why do you see the speck in your brother's eye when you can't see the log in your own eye?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you read the scriptures, not just little bits and pieces here and there, but longer sections of it, you realize this is kind of what Jesus does. He doesn't actually say things as much as he asks questions. Well, how do you read? What do you think? And so here he doesn't actually make a command. He actually asks the question. Why do you see the log? Why do you see the speck in your brother's eye? You don't see the log in your own eye. Huh. Well, that's a provocative question.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now we're going to start a firestorm, I would imagine, today. And we invite callers to call in, especially if you are disagreeing with us. Well, you're disagreeing with Glenn, not me. But that number is 1-877-933-2484. If you have a question or you want to have something clarified, give us a buzz. We'll definitely take the call. But we get back to this 50-50 idea. Mm-hmm. And if a person is clearly wronged by somebody and they really do want it to be their fault, I would imagine there are occasions where it is 100% their fault. Or is that just not the case ever?
It really just isn't. I was just in church the other week and just, quote unquote, happened to sit in front of this person who is in a long, ongoing conflict with a dear friend of mine. And after church, this woman, who just happened to be sitting behind me, came up to my wife and I, and she went on and on about all the things the other person had done. She said, I thought I had forgiven that person. I really thought I had, but... And then she, again, just repeated all the other things the person had done wrong. And I thought to myself, huh, you're asking yourself, why can't I forgive that person, while continually rehearsing in your head everything they've ever done wrong?
Mm-hmm.
How is that going to work?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any sense. And so then a person's going to say, Glenn, I'm having a real hard time with forgiveness. And I'm thinking, no, you're not doing forgiveness. You're just reminding yourself over and over again of why you're right to be so upset.
Mm.
And I think this is not the path to forgiveness.
So how does that connect to 50-50, or did I completely miss that point?
No, you did not, but thank you for bringing us back.
Yep.
See, here's what that woman wasn't saying. Well, there are two things she could have done. Either pathway would have taken her to forgiveness, and they're both about 50-50. One, she could have just said, you know, that person did hurt me, and I'm pretty clear about that. But upon reflection, I really get there are things I could have done differently. There are things I could have done better. I can see how I did some things that they might have misunderstood. I understand now that they've given it some prayerful reflection and really been open to the Spirit, kind of what I could have done differently. I didn't hear her say any of those sentences, which would have then taken her from, I can't forgive you because you're a monster, to thinking, oh, I get it. Of course I forgive you. You made some mistakes just like I made some mistakes.
Mm.
And you're not this terrible, awful person. You're a person who made some mistakes just like me.
Mm.
And as soon as I get that, see, the path to forgiveness gets a lot more clear.
So two sinners put into any relationship is going to be two sinners in a relationship.
Exactly. We're all imperfect in our own way, right? And so as soon as we think, well, that was all your fault, it's like, no, it really, that's not how it goes.
Mm, but there's people listening today going, oh, wait. You're telling me that this was done to me and I have responsibility.
Yep. Give us an example because that'll be helpful.
You're asking me?
Yeah, like maybe a question that you might think, well, somebody would think, no, this can't possibly be my fault.
Well, let's see. I'm in this relationship and all of a sudden... I go down to the basement and I go get on a computer and I find out that this person was viewing a lot of horrible websites.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden I feel betrayed.
Right.
And that's entirely his fault.
And here's what we're going to find. The fact that he did that is his fault. Here's the interesting thing. Let's say my wife and I are in a really difficult relationship. We spend less and less time together. We drift further and further apart because that's what's easiest for both of us. Okay, so now we're in this place where we're both pretty disconnected. And then maybe we both make some bad decisions. She thinks, okay, from now on, I'm just going to focus on the kids. I'm going to focus on my job. I'm going to focus on the ministry at church and not really be home very much. And maybe the other person thinks, well, I'm going to focus on work. I'm going to find somebody else to be with. And they might both make bad decisions, and they're responsible for their bad decisions. But they're both responsible for how that relationship got to the point in the first place where suddenly looking at other options seemed to make sense.
Mm-hmm. But then that's when usually they come into your office and she is as mad as can be because now we finally have something to pin him down on and he's guilty and this is the problem.
Right, exactly. And it's so easy because the trick is that is half the problem. It's absolutely true. That is half of the problem. And the rest of what we have to look at is, okay, let's say, for example, some breach happens or an affair happens or somebody's abusive even. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
You could say, okay, that's one person's fault. But here's what I know. If those two people want to create a radically different relationship, a godly transformed relationship, they're both going to have to be willing to do that relationship radically differently.
And
one of them is going to be upset by that news.
Because it's going to be such a shift. It's going to be something entirely foreign, isn't it?
Right. Yes, I used to work some with women who had been abused and were in their shelter. And I was pretty unpopular with some of the leadership there because I wanted the women to think, okay, how am I going to do my life differently? And oftentimes the people at the shelter were like, no, you're the victim. This terrible, awful thing happened to you. But here's what I know. Those same women who are coming out of an abusive relationship had probably been in several abusive relationships before that one.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they get, quote unquote, rescued from the one they're in, if they don't learn anything different, they're just going to create a new one just like this one.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Do you find that to be the pattern? I mean, you get out of one type of relationship that has certain elements to it,
only
to be freed from it to return to the next relationship,
exactly,
which has all the same thing in it.
Right. I always think to myself, if I told you my marriage to Gwen was awful and terrible and it's all her fault, I just married the wrong woman. If only I was with the right woman, I could finally be happy. Honest to goodness, I would divorce her, wreck my life, and in 2 years I'd be married to her sister. Because if I'm a certain way and I go through that process of breaking up and I don't learn anything about myself because I blame the whole thing on somebody else, so I don't learn anything, I don't mature in any way, I don't take those lessons that God's shown me and use them to change my character, I don't become a new person myself,
mm-hmm,
so I'm still my same old self, well, my same old self is going to be attracted to the same old kind of person.
Yeah. Now, if you want to get involved in today's conversation or you have a question for Dr. Pickering, give us a call at 1-877-933-2484. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson. We're going to take a little break and come back with lots more. Welcome back to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson. You know, God tells us to love our neighbor. We all know that's a tough one. And we need to be in right relationships with everybody, but not all of our relationships are right. So we get in certain conflicts with our kids or our spouse or our coworker. How do we get back into right relationships? I'm talking to Dr. Glenn Pickering today, and he is talking about the 50-50 principle that we all have our contribution to this conflict or issue. But my question is, if half of it is my fault, how do I figure out what part is my part?
Great question. Thank you. There are several ways to go about this. And it's a really great question. And here's how come. We don't really get it sometimes because we don't always see ourselves all that clearly. You know, there's an old saying that you can't see the forest for the trees. Well, see, we're in the trees of our own life. And we've done the things we've done them for so long, we really just think they're normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes we have a hard time saying, well, what is my part? And it's the same with our strengths. So let me digress just for a second, if that's okay. I was helping to lead a retreat a number of years ago, a visioning retreat. There were like 18 leaders of the church, and they're each talking about their own vision and how that might fit with the vision of the church. And each person would talk for several minutes, and then I would summarize that in like a sentence or two at the end. And they'd be like, yeah, yeah, that's what I meant. Okay, great. Afterwards, a pastor of my church came to me and said, Glenn, you are amazing. And I promise you, I had no idea what he was talking about. And I was like, what? And he said, you can listen to people for several minutes at a time, summarize what they said in one sentence or two sentences better than they actually said it, and make them think, yeah, that's right. And I promise you, with my hand on a stack of Bibles, I thought to myself, who can't do that? I had no idea.
Yeah.
Until they showed me that was, see, again, just because I had always been good at that,
mm-hmm.
you know, before as a psychologist, as a minister, and before that as a, you know, electrical engineer. So I think logically like that. I didn't know that other people couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And until somebody pointed that out, I didn't really get it.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same with our struggles. If I'm willing to talk to somebody honestly, not in that tag-playing way where I say to my friend, yeah, my wife and I are having trouble, she's terrible, she's awful, and I want him to chime in about how awful she is. If I have a relationship not like that, where I go and talk to my friend about a struggle I'm having in my marriage, and he's the kind of friend who actually is smart, then when I say to him, well, what do you think my part of that is? He's going to tell me probably what my part of that is. Because, see, everybody else can see my strengths better than I can.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Everybody else can see my weaknesses better than I can, too. Because just like I take my strengths for granted, I take my weaknesses for granted. I think, well, that's how everybody is. Mm. But it's really not true. We each have our own unique set of strengths and weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes a friend is actually a good person to help us just kind of sort that out in a loving way, hopefully not mean. But like, so a lot of times other people, if we're open, other people will actually be able to tell us pretty clearly what our half of that might be.
But it seems that when you are playing the tag game,
mm-hmm.
and you're making the other person, it's entirely their fault.
Right.
You've got no ground to get any momentum going again.
Right.
You can plead forgiveness. You can say, let's reset. Let's hit the reset button.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, there's just there's that wall that's up that says,
right.
you may never get over this wall, but keep trying.
Right, exactly. So if my wife and I have an argument, and I'm quite sure she's bad and it's all her fault, and I say, okay, well, let's just drop it and move on. What I'm really saying is let's both agree that you're wrong and you're bad and just move on from here. Well, that's a kind of an agreement that will destroy your relationship over time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many times does my wife have to have arguments end like that before she starts thinking that she actually is the bad one, or that I'm the one that always makes her feel bad about herself? And pretty soon we're not talking much.
Mm-hmm. Glenn, we had an anonymous caller that said, married, and I've done everything you could do to help. Husband is very detached and removed emotionally and spiritually, won't make any effort to connect, seems like a roommate.
Right. And that's a painful situation, just so you're clear. Oftentimes when people come to me, that's kind of the state that they're in. And I think, right, when that game of tag, like I was just talking about, goes back and forth often enough, so one of us feels like they're always going to get judged, or they're always going to get criticized, or they're always going to be the bad one, at some point they basically just want to quit talking. And then we do that thing where we're sort of polite to each other, or sort of civil, but we basically walk around each other so nobody triggers another argument because we don't want to go there.
Mm.
So it's important for both people. How can I say? Like, let me talk about my wife and I just for a minute, because this is a great little example, I think. Early on in our marriage, we would have terrible arguments, and she would get really loud, and I would shut down altogether. And then we'd be quiet between each other for days. And I'd walk around for those days thinking, golly, it's too bad Gwen has such a problem with anger. Oh, boy. And I promise you, at some point in that process, God convicted me, and I mean drove me to my knees, convicted me, that we both had a problem with anger. I didn't know any more about how to do it right than she did.
Mm-hmm.
And that the reason we're going around silently for the 2 days after that was because I was so shut down, I wasn't talking.
You were angry, too.
Scared, more like.
Right.
And so I realized at that moment, that's when the 50-50 rule just got driven into me. Like, I get it. We both have to do this thing differently, or mm-hmm. we're just going to keep getting the same outcome.
Mm-hmm. What if someone in a relationship can't be convinced of this 50-50 principle? I mean, I'm thinking of a friend who had a 20-plus-year marriage, and
right.
There was lots of blame that was going on. And when someone says it's your fault, and you try to hit the reset button and ask for forgiveness and move forward, and things still unravel, it's pretty frustrating.
Right. And what I say is, please never do that. If you're in an argument or a conflict with a person in your life, a spouse, a friend, a kid, and the other one says it's all your fault, It's wrong to apologize and then move on, because that's acting like that's true. And we're now moving forward under a false premise, which never works. A real relationship has to be based on the truth, not on a lie. And it was all my fault is always a lie. So I want everyone who's listening to understand this. If I'm in a conflict with my wife, a friend, anybody, and I want to apologize, I want to be clear. I want to apologize for my half of how that went wrong. And I want to be clear about what my half was of how that went wrong. And I want to apologize for my half of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not all their fault, and it's not all my fault. That doesn't make any sense. So I want to come into that conversation being ready to be honest and open and humble about my half. And then my prayerful wish would be then that the other person sees I'm not being mean to them, I'm not lashing out, I'm not making them the bad one. I can clearly see what I did. And I'm hoping that gives them the chance then to say, to sort of cop to whatever their part was of that conversation that went wrong. And if they do, then we actually get to move forward in an actually truly reconciled relationship. If that doesn't happen, we're not reconciled.
So it's pretty critical that there's love, gentleness, and willingness to be in that place where you're willing to receive the person's apology or forgiveness, or
right.
they accept their responsibility for their half of the relationship or what they've done wrong.
Right.
And that's the only way things are going to get corrected.
Right.
Is that
there's
right?
Yeah, there's no other right way. And I don't mean that in a pedantic sort of way. I just mean it's the only way that works, because the two of us were in a conflict. The two of us each contributed something to that conflict. And if we need to get back in right relationship, which is what the Bible says we must do, then we need to come back and each own whatever our part of that conflict was, because that's the only way to be back in right relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we're just in a lie, and that doesn't work.
Okay, you're at the point where you go, I just want to quit. That's mm-hmm. enough. I'm mm-hmm. done. Yeah. I'm out. Then what?
Well, I have a friend who's a really great attorney. I think it's easy. People often say, well, Glenn, I've tried everything. And I think, not sarcastically, just factually, yes, you've tried everything you know how to do.
Mm.
But that's not everything I promise you. That's just everything you know how to do.
Right.
This is why, honestly, going to a counselor or a pastoral counselor or someone who's wise about things is so helpful, because they'll help you understand the things that you haven't done.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, remember, we're blind to our strengths and weaknesses. Well, we're blind to what we don't know we don't know.
That's so true.
Yeah. And so I've tried everything just means I've tried everything I know. Well, there's probably a lot of things you don't know.
That's true. So the toolbox maybe only has a couple tools in it, and
right.
you keep using those over and over, and
right.
they're not the right ones.
Right. They always, you know, say in the 12-step programs, you know, the definition of insanity.
Right.
Keep doing the thing, same thing over and over. Expect the result to be different.
Expecting new results.
Right.
All right. We're going to open the phone lines, 1-877-933-2484. If you have a question for Dr. Glenn Pickering, please give us a call. We're talking about relationships, and each of us have a 50-50 obligation to be involved and to conduct our lives that way, to be in a right relationship. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, lots more with Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie. We're talking today to Dr. Glenn Pickering. We're figuring out how to get back in right relationships when we're not. We know that God tells us to love our neighbor, and we know that's tough. And then we have conflict with our spouses and kids and coworkers, and things are separated, and we got to get back together. So how do we do that? I'm trying to figure out, Glenn, when we talk about this 50-50 principle that you are sharing with our listeners. We're trying to figure out our part. How else do we figure out our part? Can we trust our friends to be objective and fair? Or are they always going to side with us?
Well, here's the interesting thing. Our friends will do whatever we ask them to. And so if I'm complaining about my marriage and going on and on about how terrible Gwen is, then they will dredge up examples in their mind that they can think that's maybe something she did wrong. And then they're going to jump on that bandwagon and say, oh, yeah, right. Remember the time she did this? Because basically I'm telling them that's the feedback I want. But if I honestly say, hey, I'm in this struggle, I know it has to partly be about me. What, help me think about that. What's my part of that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then they're going to tell me that. You know what I mean? So what the feedback I get depends totally on the feedback that I'm asking for.
Yeah. To quote Dick Cavett, he said, it's a rare man who wants to hear what he doesn't want to hear.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a pretty bold step to say to your friends,
right.
You know, tell me, what is it?
Right. What's my half of that?
Because that could be, that could get ugly.
Well, or honest.
Or honest, yeah. But how much do we want honesty from friends at times?
Yeah.
We just want comfort and assurance that we're going to be okay, and we want support.
Right.
So to show up and offer advice, that could be dangerous.
Well, you know, so often when people say, well, I want to be supportive, what they mean is, okay, so I'm going to agree with whatever you say. But we need to understand as Christians, that's not what support actually looks like. So if I have a trouble with my wife, Gwen, and I complain to my friends, and all they do is agree that she's a terrible person, thinking they're supporting me, how is that supporting me? I'm not learning anything, I'm not growing, I'm not getting any tools I can use, and it's not even comforting to me. It just gets me more worked up than I was before.
Mm-hmm. What about when there's conflict with mom and dad, and the kids are in this crossfire? What do they do to support mom or dad when they're so conflicted themselves about the tension that's going on in the household?
Depends how old the kids are.
All right, give me a couple of examples.
Well, let's say,
teenagers.
Let me flip it from that adult side first. Sometimes couples get divorced, and then, you know, so the kid will come back from a visit with mom and say, well, mom says that you were always just too blah, 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 that's why you're divorced. And the dad will then want to defend themselves. And now the kid's in the middle of that conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And the only right thing for the dad to say is, okay, well, sounds like that's something I'll have to talk to mom about.
And that neutralizes it for the kid.
Right.
Takes him off the table.
Yeah, in other words, the adult will have that adult conversation and you're not in it.
Mm-hmm.
And if a kid is old enough, then they need to do the same thing. If one of the parents starts complaining to the kid about the other one, then the kid's only job is to say, sounds like you need to talk to dad about that.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like you need to talk to mom about that and kind of leave the room, because otherwise you get pulled into stuff that's not your stuff.
Mm-hmm. So now I'd like to not entirely shift, but I want to move into something like a coworker that we're at odds with. We're not in a right relationship with the coworker.
Right.
And it gets a little trickier if I'm going to suggest my 50% of what's going wrong or what's not working,
right.
Especially in a work environment where you don't want to have people think you're incompetent or you're not doing your job well or you screwed up.
Here's an interesting thing. We all have a truth meter. And when we hear the truth, the needle, bang, pegs over to the side. So if there's a problem at work and I can see what my half of that was, and so I say to my coworker or my boss, well, I can see how I could have done that differently. So from now on, I'm going to do it like this instead. They're like, oh, okay, great. Because they hear the truth. They know it's true. They can see I'm not being clever or manipulative or any of that stuff. I'm just telling the truth. And they will think, oh, okay, great. Sounds like a plan. And honestly, they will be done with that conversation because they can tell that that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if I say, well, wasn't really my fault because Dennis didn't really get me the stuff on time. And so blah, blah, blah. See, the truth meter pegs in the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And they start thinking, this isn't really ringing true. This doesn't really seem right. There's something wrong with this. They start asking a lot of questions. It gets weird and uncomfortable. But it gets weird and uncomfortable because I just didn't tell the truth.
Mm, yeah, good point. So when people are starting relationships and they're getting to know each other and they offer each other lots of grace because there's that period of finding out who they are,
right.
There are certainly opportunities for the truth meter to not maybe be on track right from the get-go.
Right.
And then you maybe fall in love and get married and 20 years later, you were 3 degrees off when you started, or two degrees off, and now you're really a long ways away from each other.
Right, and that can happen so easily, in part because I really meant it when I said we don't actually have a very clear picture of our own strengths and weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if a couple's getting to know each other, they're each telling about each other, they're telling about themselves as best they can, but none of us know ourselves all that well.
Mm-hmm.
I literally see, even though in my 60s, I'm still getting a way clearer and clearer picture of who I am. It's, it's striking to me how true that is.
Right. And at that stage, we're doing sales and marketing.
Oh, we're doing sales and marketing,
yeah.
but to the best we can. I mean, it's like to the extent that we actually know ourselves. So somebody might say years later, well, you never told me you were dot, dot, dot.
Mm-hmm.
And the other person might think, actually, I didn't know I was.
Right. And that's a fair thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Now that it's come up so often in our relationship, I see that that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But until I was in this close, intimate relationship where I was with somebody every day, I didn't even get that I had that issue.
Yeah. There was a pastor, I think his name is Lewis Smeeds. He said, my wife has been married to 5 different men, all of them
right,
me.
Right, exactly. And if we're in a successful marriage, that's how it goes. We just keep learning and growing and learning and growing together.
Mm-hmm. But that's that can be very disturbing as well. I mean, it's like you wake up and you go, who do I have today? Is
right.
that fair or is that...
Well, there's some
hopefully
truth
that's... Yeah, I don't know.
I just think... I love to read stories of people who have had near-death experiences. You know, they die, they cross over, they're in heaven, and then they come back.
Yeah.
They're powerful stories. And they all say the same thing. They say there's only 2 things we bring with us, love and wisdom. In other words, all the people we love on this side, we still love on the other side. And all the lessons we learn here, we take with us. Now, that's interesting to me because that says then from God's perspective, there's 2 reasons why we're here, to be in right relationship and learn things. And so we're supposed to be continually learning and growing in wisdom and in depth and in our faith.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm on a godly path, then I am in that process of continually learning and growing and changing. And so I know it's easier and safer to just kind of stay where you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's really not a godly path.
Mm-hmm. So as we look at ways to try to discover what our part is
sure.
in a relationship that's in trouble, we can start with the self-introspection, which isn't going to get you very far because you don't really know yourself and
right.
you've got blind spots and you
right.
can't see what's in your blind spots.
Right.
So friends can come along and if they have the ability to be honest and loving and kind, they might be able to offer you something.
Right.
And then, of course, there's the tools that a professional will bring
right.
to help lead and guide you. But
right.
you have to have 2 people that are saying, I'm willing to say this might be half of my fault.
Right.
And to me, I'm wondering, how often do couples come into your office saying, we've agreed that it could be half of our faults?
Right. Here's what I know. In counseling, we're not going to make any progress until we're clear about that. As long as one of us is still thinking, it really is not my fault, right? We're not really going to learn anything because there's no transformation that's going to happen. And so I encourage people to really think carefully about what's their contribution. Now, sometimes it's tricky because some people's contribution is what they don't do. Here's what I mean. So I talked about that anger thing that Gwen and I used to struggle with so badly. She'd get really loud. I would get more and more quiet, which made her feel more abandoned and uncared for, which made her get louder, which I would get even more quiet and shut down and what's on. And eventually one of us would just leave. She would leave slamming the door. I would just leave quietly, but somebody would leave. And then it would end like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, like I said, it'd be quiet for days afterwards. And I would go around thinking, Gwen had a problem with anger. Oh, my goodness. So what you would notice, if somebody who didn't know what they were talking about just watched that argument, they would think, oh, yeah, Gwen's got a problem. She's loud. She says things you're not supposed to say. Poor Glenn, he just sits there quietly.
Mm-hmm.
But see, if you're looking at your 50, you who are listening, and you're having a hard time thinking, well, what's my 50? You might be having a hard time because your 50 might be about what you don't do.
Mm.
I didn't speak up. I didn't tell my truth. I wasn't assertiveness. I wasn't bold. I didn't hang with her in the conversation. I didn't tell Gwen that she'd been hurtful to me. There was a whole lot of things I didn't do that allowed that really, really icky interaction to continue.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really understood when God convicted me about this, that I absolutely had to do my part differently. And my part was I had to go from all the things I wasn't doing and start boldly doing those things.
Okay, so how do we create an environment where it's safe to step into the arena without losing your head? Because it sounds like in this situation, you talk about the things you didn't do. You were on the sidelines a little bit,
right.
and you weren't telling your truth. You weren't stepping
right.
in.
Yep.
But who wants to do that if you're going to lose your head?
Right. And so here's how it started for me. Because God convicted me about that, that's the first thing I said to Gwen. I get it. I really get it. I've been acting like this is your fault. I'm wrong. I'm half of this. I get it. I can't even always get what my half is yet because I'm just barely figuring this out. But
mm-hmm.
I get that it has to be true. I'm not any better at dealing with anger than you are. And I had to just be dead honest with her about that and with myself.
Mm-hmm.
So in the big picture, I just start from there. But that's where we always start, remember? I mean, if there's a conflict, I have to be willing to own my half. And my half was I wasn't speaking up. I wasn't saying my part. And I was willing to go along with Gwen thinking that it was all her fault.
Mm-hmm.
Well, shame on me. You know what I mean? Like, that's not right. So I had to own my half of that. And then in any specific conflict that comes up, the same thing is true. I have to be willing to own my half. Now, you ask, how do we make it safe? And here's the cool thing. I'm sure this is why Jesus asked that question, why do you see the speck in your brother's eye? You don't see the log in your own eye. Because by starting out with myself, coming forth to the other person, saying, hey, I feel really bad that we had that icky conversation, I can so clearly see my part of that, I really want to apologize to you for my part, which was X, Y, and Z. When I'm willing to start from there, it's incredibly disarming.
But you always do it. You always say that. You always act that way. And all of a sudden, I hear the air going out of your windbag.
And if I'm dead honest, I'm going to say it probably is true that I've done that a lot.
But are you getting a little more defensive right now? Because I'm getting defensive.
Here's the interesting thing. If I want to change something, I have to be willing to do it twice. So, for example, if I come before Gwen and say, I'm really sorry, I've been really quiet too long, and that's wrong with me. Darn, right, it's wrong. You've been doing that so bad. You're making me feel so bad. And I'm going to say, you're absolutely right. It was wrong with me. I totally claim that that's true.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty much going to say the same thing over again.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, then, there's a very high likelihood the other person is going to say, oh, okay, then. I'm going to shift gears into a different kind of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, every time after that, when Gwen and I had a conflict, I would start by saying, I know this is partly about me. I don't even know what my part is sometimes, but I still know that it's partly about me. And I want to claim that, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
And now, so let me get back to the other part then about how you might be able to figure out where your half is if you don't know. Your half is the exact flip side of whatever they're doing.
Mm. Explain that. I need some help on that one.
Thank you. Just kidding. Like it was real obvious in that one with Gwen. She got really loud. That was her problem. So what was my problem?
You were too soft. You were too
really,
quiet.
Really quiet.
Mm-hmm.
She was saying things she shouldn't have said. What's my half? I wasn't saying the things I should have said.
Okay.
Her problem was that she acted like she was all alone and that had to make her point. And I was so shut down that it made her feel like she really was alone. And that's why she did have to make her point.
Mm.
She was trying to get some reaction out of me, so she kept getting louder and louder to get a reaction. And because I was so shut down, she wasn't getting a reaction. I mean, it's like at every step of the way, all I have to do to know what my part is just to look at the flip side of what the other person is doing, because that is my part.
Wow. That's an interesting point. Well, if you have a call or a question or a comment, give us a ring at 1-877-933-2484. We have one more segment with Dr. Glenn Pickering. We'll be happy to take calls. Thanks for listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Live the Promise. We have time for a call or two. If you want to give us a buzz, 1-877-933-2484. We're talking to Dr. Glenn Pickering and the 50-50 principle as to how we need to participate in our relationships, whether it's with a significant other or a coworker just about anybody. And when we try to figure out what's our side of the coin is, the best way, from what I think I remember, Glenn, you just saying, was what I would call the flip side of the coin diagnosis, which is whatever that person is doing, you're probably doing the opposite. There's how you determine your 50%.
Right. And it's true on that real microscopic level, like we're just talking about. So if Gwen and I have a bad argument, what's my part of that argument? The exact flip side of what everything she does in that argument. But it's also the same thing is true on a bigger scale. If somebody says, oh, my partner is so controlling, I think, okay. And again, they're going to say to me, like, they're expecting me to argue. I'm quite sure they're probably right. And then I'm going to say, so you must be really passive then. Because I really get passive people marry controlling people.
Mm-hmm.
As we get in relationships with people who have very similar strengths to ours, that's the great part. And the exact flip side of our weakness, that's the struggle part.
Hmm. And so say that again.
We get in relationships with people who have the very similar strengths to ours. And so we say, do we marry people who are just like us? Yes. And... but sometimes we say we marry the opposite, and I think, But the opposite part that we marry is we marry someone with the opposite side of our same problem. So, for example, if I'm real controlling and everything has to be my way, and that's my character flaw, I'm just real bossy and everything has to be my way, who am I going to marry?
Hmm.
Someone's real passive and says, okay, Glenn, whatever you say, I don't care. And even if I do ask her opinion, she says, I don't care, whatever you want.
Mm. Interesting.
Because that's what I've taught her to do.
Yeah. We have a caller, Chad, from Detroit Lakes. Chad, yeah. Welcome to the show. Oh, I'm sorry, Carol. I don't have my glasses on. Looks like Chad. Carol, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Do you forgive me for calling you Chad?
Yes, I do.
Thank you so much. Note to self, get an eye appointment. Okay, go ahead. You have a question for Dr. Pickering.
Well, this is what I have learned over 35 years of marriage. My husband was not a born-again, spirit-filled believer. And it was only God's grace that has gotten me to 35 years of marriage. And through that, he's given much wisdom to me because I was desperate and I was crying out to God. And he started getting tools in my hands, and he started putting mentors in my life. And my parents are in their 80s and 90s. They've been married 67 years. And I have learned a lot from them. But the main thing that I wanted to say to you, Glenn,
mm-hmm.
if you don't mind me sharing this, is
go right ahead. It's great.
That relationships are to be 50-50.
Right.
Because according to God's word, it should be 100-100.
Right.
Each Which partner is giving 100 of themselves to the other.
Right.
Because that is killing the flesh.
Right. And honestly, that's what 50-50 really means, to be honest. We both have to give all of ourselves. So if there's any sort of a conflict, I have to look at my whole self. I have to do total self-reflection. I have to be totally vulnerable and totally honest, and I have to totally claim what my half of that struggle was. And I need my wife to do exactly the same thing. And unless we are...
See, in my situation,
right?
Even though I was giving or God was helping me to give 100, even though I did not have a partner that was willing to do that, I still needed to show him grace. I needed to love and pray and intercede for him.
Mm-hmm. And what if that was the lesson you had to learn? What if that was your 50%?
Yeah, and see, the thing is, you know, people need to realize God's in control. And if we choose to let go and let him be God in our marriage partner's life, he will.
Right. And now here's the cool thing. So all of us, we're in a marriage. It's not going right one way or another, just like you said. And we always think, okay, God, you got to fix the other person. So we pray and we pray and we pray. And then who does God actually change?
It's us.
Right. Exactly. that's what I mean about the 50-50
part. And that boils down to even if the other partner isn't giving 100%,
right.
You still need to work at your 100%.
Exactly. And then the interesting thing is, then the relationship starts to shift. Instead of looking at him judgmentally and thinking, oh, you're not the right kind of believer, because God's having you work on yourself and become more graceful, more accepting, more forgiving, I'm guessing that he now finds you a way easier wife to be married to, and I'm guessing that it's actually shifted your marriage.
It is. God is working tremendously in my life. See, I did not understand that from God's perspective that
right.
a wife needed to honor and respect her husband.
Right.
I didn't understand that when I first was married.
Right.
I couldn't figure out why was there such conflict.
Right. Yes, and so as soon as one of us in a marriage looks down at the other one in that sort of judgmental, condescending way and says there's something wrong with the way you are, why doesn't God change the way you are? God starts working, all right. He starts working on the one of us who looks at the other one and says, why aren't you a different way? And then
yeah.
the one who thinks they're the quote-unquote right one is the one who ends up getting transformed.
Yeah.
And the awesome thing is, if you just keep praying, open the eyes of my understanding,
mm-hmm.
you know, God will do that.
Yeah, sometimes so much we don't know what to do with it. Sometimes
yeah.
I say, God, give me clarity. And then I get so much clarity, it's like, oh, my goodness.
Carol, thanks.
Yeah, then he really opens up.
I know. It's
really
so true.
Carol,
ugh.
Thank you so much for calling, Carol. And
do you
please,
take care?
Please do not let anyone call you Chad again.
No,
okay?
That's not right.
Thank you, dear. All right.
You bet. Bye-bye.
So, Glenn, did we confuse people with the math?
Well, it's possible. And I understand what people are saying. They have to give all of myself, which is absolutely true. And it's important to remember that all of myself is half of that relationship.
I don't know if I get that. I'm not horribly bright today, but go ahead. Try that again on me.
But see, so Carol was saying, well, actually it's 100-100, and they're both true. Because me giving 100% to the marriage is my half of that marriage. And if there's anything
where
I don't bring my whole, real, true, honest, transparent self to that marriage, and I'm not giving 100%, mm-hmm. then that's going to be my half of whatever it is that's going wrong in that marriage,
mm-hmm.
is whatever it is that I'm holding back, whatever it is that I'm not doing, whatever way I'm not being my best self,
mm-hmm.
that's going to show up in the marriage, and that's my half of how that thing's going wrong.
Mm-hmm. And Glenn, what would you say is the number one fear in most married relationships?
I think, honestly, look, do we got a couple minutes yet?
Yeah.
Okay. We actually all have one fear. There's only one. So you ask anybody, what are they afraid of? Well, I'm afraid of public making a mistake in public. Okay, why? Because then people will notice. Uh-huh. And then what? And then people won't like me. Uh-huh. Then what? And then nobody will be with me. Uh-huh. And then what? And then I'll be alone. Every fear we have just really comes down to that one fear, that we'll be alone.
Mm.
And so part of the reason why we don't speak up in a relationship, or we don't tell the truth, or we don't want to be the bad one, is then we think the other person won't like us, and then we're going to end up alone.
Alone.
Now, the really weird satanic trick in that, it's exactly by playing that game, not telling the truth, not being vulnerable, keeping my thoughts to myself, blaming anybody else, that I end up alone.
Hmm. Self-fulfilling prophecy
it
there?
It so is. And Satan gets me to think, well, Glenn, you don't want to be alone, do you? So keep that thought to yourself. But if I keep a thought to myself, guess how I am?
Mm.
I'm alone with that thought, right? Or that part of my life, or that whatever.
Yeah.
I'm alone. And so it's I really, really get the only way to not be alone is to be open and transparent with the people in my life about my strengths and my weaknesses and the mistakes I make so that I can be back in the right relationship, because that's the only way I'm not going to end up all by myself.
Okay, 45 seconds, and then give me a baby step as to how I might take ownership in the relationship I'm having where I need to identify what my half is.
I'd love you to ask three people in your life, what do you think my strengths are in relationships, and what do you think my weaknesses are?
Mm.
In a way that makes it clear, you actually want to know the answer.
And then those are friends, or
right, people who
are
you trusted, people you trust to tell you the truth, whoever that might be.
And what's the best way to go about that? Is it over coffee? Is it, do you send them an email? How do you do that?
I think it depends on the person, but setting them up, you want to give them time, like giving them an email that says, hey, I'd like to go to coffee to talk about this. So they come ready to be in that conversation, because you probably don't want them off the top of their head. You want them to give it some serious thought.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know there's people who have been a little bit upset today, probably hearing that they're in a relationship where they have to take their ownership, their side of the street.
Right.
And it's not always the other person is fault, it's they have to take their side as well. So they're upset right now, and they want to take that baby step to improve. Would you pray for them?
I so would. Oh, I pray for each of you who are listening, and I pray that God's word just soak gently, gently, gently into your heart, that looking at your half, claiming your half, letting God open your eyes, being convicted about the truth is not scary. The truth is never scary. Trust that God will walk with you in that path, and that your vulnerability will not make you be alone in the end, but will actually connect you to every person into your life and to God in a really powerful and deep way. I pray that for you with all my heart. Amen.
Thank you very much, Dr. Glenn Pickering. It's such a delight to have you on the show. If you want to hear this episode or pass it on to a friend, you can go to myfaithradio.com, go up onto the webpage, Live the Promise. It's up there. Matt figures out how to do that. I just look at Matt and wave my hand. That's all I do. But that wraps up Hour 1. Thanks for being with us. Hour 2 is coming up with Michael Cusick and his book, Surfing for God. It's going to be a fascinating hour. Thanks for being with us. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson. Stay tuned for Hour 2.